But, Mr. Hardy...
Don't keep interrupting me.
Not doing that. I'm trying to be clear what you're
saying.
What
I'm saying is perfectly clear. If you can't stand the heat in the kitchen, you will break the eggs and make an omelette. But you won't be able to afford the omelette because of the Labour government, and this is it with regard to this.
Look, yeah, but look, with great respect, what
don't
I'm trying to...
with great respect me. Where I come from in Derbyshire, we know what your sort mean when they say, with great respect, riding down Savile Row in your posh BBC car and saying, I think I'll buy some silk underwear with great respect.
I wouldn't know silk underwear if it bit me, but look, I want listeners to be absolutely
clear. Don't patronise listeners.
I'm not doing that. What I'm trying
don't
to do...
Don't patronise listeners because they're ordinary people, and ordinary people know what I'm saying. We are Labour, and that means traditional values in a modern setting, and traditional values is caring for ordinary people and poor people. And this is what we're not doing at the moment.
So, in other words, you're out of sympathy with a government in which you are Deputy Prime Minister. That's the point, isn't it? So, when are you going to resign?
You listen to me. There are some of us who will fight and fight and fight again. And this is it with regard to this.
Jim Hardy, thank you.
Apparently Marcia needed a couple of days off for personal reasons.
And you still think she's involved in the murders? You better tread very carefully on this one, George.
Oh, and I always. Anyway, what's been the matter with you recently?
Apart from being told by the chairman that I'd be the next Director General over his dead body.
There's some very strange things going on. It's almost as if someone is deliberately trying to scupper your chances of becoming DG.
Come off it, George.
Now, all I'm trying to do, Martin, and not for the first time, is to save the BBC from itself.
Oh, spare me the self-justification. What have you got against Caroline Holland?
Against her personally, nothing. I merely observe that she is a perfectly decent county player who would be hopelessly out of her depth leading a test team.
Is it because she's a woman?
Oh, my dear chap. I would be the first one to applaud the appointment of a female Director General when the time is right.
Well, snobbery, then. Because she read English at Southampton instead of philosophy at Oxford?
Certainly not. Anyone who can find some English to read in Southampton deserves the admiration of us all.
Well, what then? From what I've seen of her, Charles, she's a perfectly able, conscientious, nice young woman.
Nice.
Ah, nice.
Martin, who was it who said, niceness is not enough? It's not even enough in a cook.
Meaning what?
Martin, take a cursory look at the current state of British broadcasting and ask yourself this. Do you feel that the BBC can afford to be complacent?
Well...
Oh, come on, you know as well as I do the way the wind is blowing. The way our licence payers glance despairingly at the output of BBC television and say, frankly, I'd rather have tractor pulling from Rotterdam on Eurosport. Thank you, Martin. Your silence speaks volumes. At such a time, may heaven preserve us from leaders who are nice.
And this justifies your lying and cheating your way to the job and to hell with who gets hurt in the process?
Well, you know what they say. If you can't stand the heat, don't have lunch with the chairman.
Are you ready, chairman? You're on straight after the bulletin.
Couldn't be better, old boy.
Speaking on BBC Radio, the Deputy Prime Minister has said he'll fight, fight and fight again. The government's anti-sleaze commission has opened its new headquarters in central London. The so-called People's Commission has its own ballroom, swimming pool and 17 bathrooms in the style of Pugin. The Prime Minister has dismissed opposition charges of extravagance over his plans to celebrate the millennium by erecting two statues of his kittens, Clapton and Hendricks. The Prime Minister said the kittens would be inclusive. They'll be designed in the style of Pugin. BBC Radio 4 News. And now on Radio 4, the chairman of the BBC, Lord Crichton Potter, talks about his It's Your Lunch initiative, announced last week on Radio 4.
Cue, chairman, and go.
Hello, my dears. And may I say how lovely it was to see so many of you at our first It's Your Lunch meeting at the Ritz last week. You know, when I listen to you, the licence payers, one subject seems to concern you more than any other. I mean, of course, bad language. One of our most distinguished radio critics wrote recently, well, let me quote it to you. He said, "There are some broadcasters who think it is the height of sophistication to say arse on Radio 4. Well, let me make this clear. As long as I am chairman, anyone who says arse on Radio 4 will get their arse kicked. Now, next week, I shall be at the Castle Hotel in Taunton, and I do hope to meet as many of you as possible. It's your BBC, it's your lunch."
Do you know, That man has become a sort of national hero. Apparently, he's a larger-than-life figure, when most of us in public life are grey and boring.
Really, Prime Minister? Anyway, I have here the revised medium-term public expenditure figures modified in the light of statistical error factors.
Have you? Anyway, Marcia advised me to appoint him on the grounds that he was a complete idiot, and now he's more popular than any of us.
Indeed.
Russell, what do you really think of Marcia?
As Information Minister, she's doing an excellent job. Our popularity rating remains high despite the tough measures we've had to take.
Yes. Yes, well, that's true. You don't feel Marcia's a bit passionless, a bit cold?
I'd never thought about it.
My civil servants call her the fridge freezer. I only mention it because if you've got no passion, have you got commitment? I want people around me who are committed, passionately committed to what we're trying to do. I mean, take you, for example. I shall never forget that night in Islington. You looked at me over the sun-dried soup and said you realised the party wanted me as leader and not you. Remember?
I remember.
And yet here you are, soldiering on as Chancellor, utterly loyal, utterly committed.
Utterly, Prime Minister.
Kenny. And that's why, when we announced to the House this afternoon that we're cutting the job seeker's allowance by £5 a week, I want you to make the announcement.
Me?
As a testimony to the faith I have in you.
But...
Now, don't you worry about the public spending figures. If you say they're all right, I'm sure they are.
Right, I'll leave you to it then. You've obviously got better things to do.
See you in the House this afternoon. No, I shan't forget that evening, or your face as you were leaving. But I guess that's just the way the story goes.
Two hot dogs, please, mate.
On their way, boss.
George, don't you think we've got mysteries enough without mysteries at the BBC as well?
An anonymous letter and then a forged memo. Ooh, makes you wonder a bit.
Onions, mate.
We've got a serial killer to catch, my old son. I thought that was work enough.
Ketchup, mate.
I can't convince anybody at Broadcasting House to take Marcia Mallon seriously as a suspect. But she's got the motive, Frank. And with the murder of Peter Nile, she had the opportunity.
Chinese oyster sauce, mate.
Yeah, and he was an advisor to the Labour government. And, as you keep telling me, all these victims have some sort of connection with New Labour.
Pheasant soup, mate.
All I'm saying is treat her as a possible suspect, like any other possible suspect.
Well, I'll look into her whereabouts on the nights of the previous murders. I suppose I owe you that.
A piquant salad of ricotta and walnut, mate.
You can spare me for a day, can't you? I want to find out who's so desperate to stop Caroline becoming Director General.
Ratatouille with nut balls, mate.
You know, I've always said BBC infighting is nastier than anything that happens at Westminster.
Excuse me, large or small, mate?
Quite recovered, Marcia?
I'm fine, thank you, Prime Minister.
Bit of a blow, eh? You wait 30 years for a chap and then he gets himself bumped off.
I'd rather not discuss it if that's all right.
No, no, of course not. Well now, cutting job seekers' allowance. Something of a shock this for the Cabinet.
Yes, I think it might be an idea if you were to see them individually to prepare them. This is a bombshell.
Well, yes, that would be one way of doing it. But I've decided on a different approach. Total secrecy.
This is an extreme measure, Prime Minister, even for New Labour.
Exactly. Which is why I think it's best if Russell's announcement comes out of the blue. Marcia, what do you think of Russell?
He's doing an excellent job as Chancellor. No Labour government has ever retained the confidence of industry in the city the way we're doing.
Yes. You don't think he's a bit dour? You know, one of the political commentators said this morning, Paris in the Times, I think, the Chancellor is so dour he could exhibit his dourness in the Tate. Where is it? Ah, yes, here it is. The Chancellor of the Exchequer has the vision of a geriatric bat and the emotional intensity of chopsticks played on a second-hand harmonica.
Prime Minister, you employ me to read the newspapers. There's no need for you to waste your time on such trivia.
It sets a chap wondering, though. If there is no passion, is there commitment? I like commitment. I mean, take you, for example. Here you are, day after day, plugging away to sell our message to the media, and what's the result? I get popularity ratings without parallel, and everyone hates your guts.
I can handle it.
Yeah, but I want you to know that it's recognised. That's why I've decided that the minister in overall charge of the Millennium Kittens should be you.
Me?
There's been a lot of nonsense in the media about this being the PM's pet project. A guitar-strumming, cat-loving wimp, that sort of thing. Now, you're just the man, woman, I should say, to handle it.
Well,
no,
Kenny,
Marcia, don't thank me.
I can't live if living is without you. I can't live. Can't live anymore.
Ah, Richard, how are we fixed for stories today?
Well, we're going to do...
Caroline, can I have a word?
Don't I know you from somewhere? Wait a minute. No, sorry, for a minute. I thought you were our crime reporter, but you can't be. He used to file stories about murders.
Caroline, I'm going to file a story, but I need to see you first.
You know, time was when if a reporter hadn't been on the air for a couple of days, he'd be getting worried, wondering if he's doing his job properly. Still, I suppose when you get to your age...
You mean my seniority?
No, I mean your age. All right, go and wait in my office. So, Richard.
Well, we're doing a piece about the opening of the People's Commission Against Corruption from Eaton Square.
Yep.
Or the Chancellor's about to make a statement. Mm-hmm. They're keeping very quiet about it, which probably means it's something important.
Mm-hmm.
I still wouldn't mind a crime story, mind you. We're a bit overloaded with politics, otherwise.
All right. I'm sure George will come up with something.
I need it.
You heard that, did you?
Yeah, all right. God, it hardly seems 2 minutes since you were telling me to lay off the murders.
Well, only because you had this crack-brained notion that the Minister for Information was a psychopath. Just give us a down-to-earth, meaty report on the police investigation. Anyway, what did you want to see me about?
I had a rather interesting chat on my way to the newsroom with the controller of Bimedia Development, no less. Didn't you tell me that your main rival for the DG's job is a bloke called Prentice?
That's what I've heard, yes. What about it?
Prentice is the man who forged the famous memo to the chairman.
What?
And this controller bloke thought that somebody should do something about it. Like tell the chairman, for example.
Ah, I always say there's nothing like a round of golf to give a chap an appetite for his lunch. Don't you agree, Chairman? Personally, I find breakfast always gives me an appetite for lunch. Still, I'm rather looking forward to this. Do you know, I've never played golf in my life.
Really?
Well, then it's a great privilege that you should play your first game as my guest. Well, now, I think we ought to tee off.
Well, must we? But we've only just got here.
No, I mean we should begin.
Ah.
Not bad.
Chairman. Right, so I aim for up there?
Yes, for the green. That's the way.
Ah. Am I on the green?
You are on the green, Chairman. Sadly, not the first green. Or indeed, the second.
Oh, dear. Makes you feel such an ass, you know. Being that I was obviously competent.
Kind of you to say so.
All right, well, tell Robin we'll go live into the Commons at the top of the bulletin. What else have we got?
An interview with Lord McEwen's chairman of the anti-seize thing, talking about gold-plated bathtubs.
Great stuff. Run that second. Have we had anything from George?
Well, yes, you won't believe this, but he's had to go out. Said he couldn't get the person he wanted on the phone, so he was nipping off.
Around the pub?
No, not according to him. He said he was nipping out to a golf club.
Well, that's not my problem.
Oh, come, Chairman. That was a distinct improvement. I always find this place so serene. Away from all the depressing news in the world.
Oh, I do so agree.
And I don't mean to talk shop here, but, you know, I sometimes think we forget that at the BBC. My motto has always been to inform, to educate, to entertain. But the greatest of these is to entertain.
You're so very right.
Well, shall we walk on, Chairman?
Geoffrey, dear boy. Call me Geoffrey.
BBC Radio 4. The news at midday. The House of Commons has now resumed sitting after a 30-minute suspension. This followed the announcement that the job seeker's allowance is to be cut by £5 a week. From Westminster, our political correspondent, Rick Drew.
It's most unusual for an announcement of this kind to be made in the morning when MPs are not normally sitting. But as soon as word of the impending statement began to spread through Westminster, the chamber filled. Labour MPs are clearly furious, with many threatening to vote against their own government.
And we've just heard that the Deputy Prime Minister, Jim Hardy, has called a news conference for 1 o'clock.
All right, so what are we doing?
Well, the news conference will be live on 5 Live, and we'll try to interview Jim Hardy for The World in One. We've got interviews with some backbenchers lined up, and we're interviewing some unemployed people.
And what's Hardy going to do?
Well, either he's going to resign or he's going to fight and fight again. Who knows?
I think I may come and join you in the newsroom. This is the first time in 12 months we can honestly say government in crisis.
Maria, coffee.
Damn fine shot.
You know, if there's one thing I have learned from my years in broadcasting, it is that not every crisis is critical, nor every drama dramatic. I say, that's rather a good shot, Chairman.
Ah, it's your excellent teaching, Charles. I think I'm getting the hang of it. You know, the more I think about it, the more I feel it's a terrible waste of time to make a chap sit in front of a lot of BBC governors and answer a lot of impertinent questions. Sometimes one simply knows a chap is right.
Costly business, of course, getting all the governors together. Psst, having to repeat the same questions over and over, candidate after candidate, having to miss one's lunch.
Lunch? Charles, have we nearly finished this game? Splendid as it is, of course.
Well, let's simply finish this hole and then lunch, Geoffrey.
Hmm. And I think with our lunch we might have some champagne.
Mr. Cragg, it is an absolute rule that a member is never interrupted until he has completed his 18 holes.
So there is absolutely no chance of me getting a message to the chairman, even if he's about to make the worst decision of his life.
I did explain this to you on the telephone. It was really quite unnecessary for you to come.
Yeah, well, since I'm here, I might as well have a drink.
I fear that, as you are not a member, you are not permitted to buy a drink.
Oh, good. Well, in that case, I'll have a large scotch. Chairman will pay for it.
The chairman is also not a member. He is the guest of Mr. Prentice.
Well, he'll pay for it, then. Yeah. I'll pour it myself, shall I?
Oh, very well, very well.
Cheers. You have a lot of BBC members?
Only at the very highest level of management. It is a tradition, for example, that your Director-General enjoys honorary life membership.
Well, funnily enough, our last Director-General was killed in a golfing accident. Hang about. If he was a member here, is this where he had his accident?
As it happens, yes.
I don't remember seeing this club named in the reports.
That kind of publicity would have been unhelpful to us. Fortunately, we have powerful friends.
I bet your members didn't go much on the police crawling all over their precious club.
Fortunately, the police were very discreet, and one of the country's most distinguished pathologists is a member. He did what was necessary. The commissioner of the Met was most cooperative.
Oh, he's a member as well, is he?
As it happens, yes.
Well, I'm damned.
Pick one here and then all to the restaurant.
A member's privilege to buy the drinks. Allow me, Geoffrey.
Lord Crichton Potter?
Ah. Don't I know you from somewhere?
The radio newsroom, Sir George Cragg.
Oh, yes.
Well, I wonder if we might have a private word.
But I've all but offered the fellow the job. Are you saying he did this deliberately to ruin the chance of another candidate?
I thought it was information you ought to have.
Well, I'm very grateful.
No, not at all. I wouldn't want to see Caroline's chance ruined unfairly.
Plucky filly. Said so the first time I met her. Leave it to me.
Everything all right, Geoffrey?
I've never been better, old boy. Kenneth, I wonder if you'd do me a favour.
Of course, your lordship.
Would you be so kind as to ring this number and say I'd like my usual table? We should be there around one.
The World at One. The latest news headline this Tuesday lunchtime. The Deputy Prime Minister is giving a news conference at Westminster about now. We're crossing live to our political correspondent, Rick Drew.
And here in a packed meetings room at the Commons, the Deputy Prime Minister is just about to make his statement.
Ladies and gentlemen, when the government privatised the dentist, we had bitten off more than we could chew with regard to that. We put up the cost of people's eye tests and nobody could see where the government was going. When I think of the health service, it makes me feel sick. We said to students, you'll have to pay more. People said to me, Jim, I'm not happy. I've voted Labour all my life and I'm not happy. And I wasn't happy either. But I thought, fight, fight and fight again. And then I thought, who said that? You bloody Gaitskell, another right-wing traitor to ordinary working people in the Labour movement. So now they're cutting the benefits. I want to see this. I will fight them in the country, in the towns, in the papers and on the telly. And I will fight them on the back benches.
Well, I think that means the Deputy Prime Minister has resigned from the government. We'll be going back to Westminster in a moment in what's clearly going to be a highly dramatic lunchtime.
You must allow me to compose the menu for you. I'm a man of some authority in these matters.
Yes, indeed.
Now, the good thing about this place is there are no vegetarian dishes whatsoever. Absolutely none. This is a carnival for the carnivore.
Geoffrey, I think we promised ourselves some champagne.
Ah, we're not having the champagne.
No?
No. As we came in, I noticed Orlando was offering his Indonesian red. Too good to miss.
My lord. Ah. You are ready to order?
Alan, good to see you. Now, to start, what need you ask? Could it be anything but the goose gizzard and pig snout in the sauce of shark's blood with a puree of lamb's breast?
Well, actually, Geoffrey,
My dear boy, don't say another word. Lunch here is to the true gourmand what Christmas is to the small child. I know.
And to follow, monsieur, may I presume to advise your lordship that Orlando is offering his quatre mousquetaires.
His quatre mousquetaires?
His what?
Three musketeers of tripe, tongue, and testicles with a d'Artagnan of pig's trotters.
What was it that restaurant critic said? A triumph of culinary wit and precision.
Thank you, monsieur.
You know, this business of director general, damn difficult. I mean, people ask me, what's it all about being chairman of the BBC? Well, I'm not one for philosophy, but I always tell them that to me, the BBC is about spreading the good things in life as widely as possible. Do you think that's fair?
It's admirable philosophy.
Well, there you are. So, when I come to choose my DG, what I want above all is someone who enjoys, conspicuously enjoys, the good things in life. Splendid.
Goose, gizzard, monsieur.
Give him two.
Oh, no, 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 honestly.
Charles, the good things in life.
Fury of lamb's brains, monsieur.
Excellent.
Sharp blood sauce.
No, I think that perhaps that will be sufficient.
Oh, no, 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 you must have some of these.
Must I? What are they exactly?
Onions, mate.
What exactly did you pronounce the cause of death? The victim was struck on the temple by a golf ball travelling at high velocity. And tragically, there was fatal damage to the brain, in layman's terms.
And did that strike you as probable?
Well, of course it wasn't. It was a freak accident.
I mean, presumably, the theory is that somebody hit a golf ball so high in the air that it had enough velocity coming down to hit and kill somebody. I mean, apart from anything else, a golf ball falling from the sky wouldn't hit you on the temple, would it? It would bounce on your bones.
Well, that would depend on the angle. Mr. Cragg, I am not a police officer.
You're a damn funny pathologist, if you ask me.
I agreed to see you as a favour. I am not obliged to do so.
No, well, I think it's about time I saw the Metropolitan Police and put it to them that they are obliged to do so. Yeah, oh, just one other thing. If you were there that day, do you remember who else was on the course?
Not offhand. I remember a couple of Japanese businessmen being entertained by the chairman of some bank. Charles was there, one of your chaps, Charles Prentice.
What is it about this case that keeps throwing that name up?
You all right, old boy?
Yes, perfectly all right. Excuse me one moment.
Now, don't miss the pudding, will you? Orlando.
My lord.
Thank you. That was perfectly disgusting. I don't suppose there's any chance of some saddle of lamb and a decent chambertin, is there?
For two?
No, just for one.
I'm so sorry.
Are you quite sure you're all right? You look as green as a warm salad of frog's intestines.
Excuse me, Geoffrey.
Call me Chairman, old boy.
I just can't believe it, mate. You've been party to a cover-up.
Hang on, George, just a minute. Just for your information, I was not party to anything. Before you start hurling any further insults, read that.
I must put formally on record my disquiet that this inquiry is being terminated when, in my view, serious questions remain unanswered. All right.
Satisfied?
Yeah, I see. So what happened then?
Read the next page.
The Home Office is satisfied with the investigation and feels no further action is necessary. When did this tragic accident happen?
8th of May last year.
Exactly 1 week after New Labour won the election.
Oh, what's that got to do with it?
Oh, I don't know, probably nothing. Unless the Director General of the BBC was murdered by our serial killer.
George, if, and I say if, the Director General was murdered, he can't have been murdered by our serial killer.
Why not?
Because on every other killing, our boy has left messages in blood. I think I might have noticed a message in blood. It's not something they get a lot of at that snooty golf club.
You wouldn't have noticed it if somebody had cleaned it off before you got there, would you?
BBC Radio 4. It's 6 o'clock. The news with Harriet Cass. The Prime Minister has made a statement in the Commons following rowdy scenes earlier today. The Information Minister, Marcia Mallon, has announced a competition to find names for the Millennium Kittens to be built on the South Bank. England's cricketers have made a strong start in the Guyana Test. The Prime Minister has announced that the government is to rethink its proposal to cut the money paid to unemployed people following vociferous protests by Labour MPs. From Westminster, Rick Drew.
The announcement of the benefit cut was made earlier today by the Chancellor, and privately he's said to be astonished by the Prime Minister's change of heart made in a statement to MPs.
This is a courageous government, a determined government, but we are a government which listens to the British people. I make no secret that I fully support the Chancellor's idea of reducing the job seeker's allowance.
My idea?
No, look, the Chancellor is unassailable, Madam Speaker, unassailable. But I have a wider responsibility to listen to the country and to this House.
It was unseemly.
Unseemly? Does murder strike you as unseemly?
Mr. Cragg, I had no reason to believe there had been a murder. I merely wished to avoid distressing the members any further.
Are you saying somebody left a message in blood the day the DG had his accident?
I assumed it was red paint, but there was some graffiti scrawled on the wall outside.
And you cleaned it off?
Certainly I cleaned it off.
Yeah, isn't there a law against tampering with evidence, Frank?
How was I to know it was evidence? Evidence of what?
What did this graffiti say exactly?
It said, "Spirit of wreath, no flowers."
George, it's only about 2 days since you were in here telling me the Minister for Information is a homicidal loony. Now you're saying it's all right. No, she isn't, but a senior BBC manager is. Honestly, George. And all because they belong to the same golf club.
There was a message in blood at that golf club. It was murder, and it's linked to the other murders.
So Prentice bumped off the dentist, an optician, and a Cambridge don. Why?
Well, I haven't quite worked that out yet.
Oh, well, there seems to be quite a lot you haven't worked out yet. Just because Prentice forged that memo, it doesn't make him a murderer, does it?
Where's that coffee?
Somehow, from someone, the chairman appears to have discovered my authorship of the memo. How the hell did he find out?
And he made you sit there and eat all that ghastly muck as a joke. What a man.
My sole consolation throughout the proceedings was pretending the chairman's name was Armitage Shanks.
Well, that's flushed away your chance of becoming DG. What a pity.
I've been called many things, Martin. But never a quitter.
Oh, Charles, even you must give up after this, surely.
Martin, my dear Martin, I never give up. Never.
An early night for once.
Yeah, let's leave the night shift to it, shall we?
Fancy a quick one.
Oh, my God, George. I think your sins have caught up with you at last.
George, get in.
I'm innocent, officer, I swear.
No talk of mucking about, just get in. We've got to get the wolf and stuff.
What's happened?
The manager at the job centre's been murdered. There was a message in blood. 6 days shalt thou labour.
In the Chair was written by Mark Taverner and starred Michael Williams, Barry Foster, Hugh Laurie, Stephen Fry, John Bird, Richard Griffiths, Rebecca Front and Kenneth Cranham. And also featured Susie Brann, Simon Greenall, Darren Boyd, John Rowe, Chris Pavlo, John Humphreys, Andrew Crawford and Harriet Cass. The music was composed by Paul Mottram. In the Chair was produced by Paul Schlesinger.